This is Sound and Vision on KEXP. I'm Larry Mizell Jr. A comprehensive history of Seattle's hip-hop scene was recently published. It's called Emerald Street, A History of Hip-Hop in Seattle, written by Dr. Dowdy Abe, professor of humanities at Seattle Central College. The book's title is taken from the Emerald Street Boys, generally acknowledged as Seattle's first hip-hop group. Since then, the scene has produced such talents as Sir Mix-a-Lot and Macklemore, but also world champion B-Boy crew Massive Monkeys. Abe talks about all of these and seminal artists from the city whose impact locally is just as important to our scene's growth. Here's my conversation with him.
You know, a big question that comes up a lot in the book is around how Seattle hip hop for a long time, and you know, still doesn't necessarily enjoy a huge national following as a whole. Do you think there was a point in Seattle's hip hop history where it deserved that following, or was that following should have been the natural, you know, result of what was going on?
I think that this area deals with, and I know that I've read from you and even quoted, I think, the issue of our self-esteem and how that can be notoriously low at times. I feel like if you, the more I've been thinking about it, if you look at this place, what other place outside of the main kind of New York, Atlanta, Chicago, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, the very well-established, not only hip-hop centers or scenes that have come out of there to produce a lot of material, but just what other area has done it like we've done it? And I'm saying that just in the sense of the, you know, if you want to call it an outsider city, it's one of the outsiders. I think maybe that was a term that used to get thrown around, maybe sure. Like in the 90s or in the 2000s when people were just talking about, you know, geographic representation. I mean, the outside of the huge cities, there haven't been. I don't think there's been a city that has really had the breadth of hip hop kind of contributions. Even going unnoticed, or a lot of times, maybe not unnoticed, but not necessarily feeling like we're getting our just due.
I think a lot of times when we talk about the perception of the hip hop scene here, kind of not having what it needs, not being supported in different ways, it in a lot of ways has more to do with the settings and the environment here at home, you know, and you know, it's hard to talk about hip hop and not talk about race.
Yep.
Do you think that the city's demographics, that is to say, a drastically smaller black and brown population than you found in the cities where you have these famous hip hop scenes, do you think that's a part of why, you know, aside from the handful of breakout acts that Seattle hip hop has, you know, historically struggled here and outside of here?
That's actually a really good question because, you know, I do feel like the diverse nature of the scene here has been one of the strengths. It's been the variety of perspectives, and I think, you know, I would kind of take it back to the discussion around kind of geographic isolation and how that has kind of traditionally given artists from here at least feeling more of a license that they don't have to try to do what everybody else is doing.
Sure.
You know, probably the early example of that would be Mix-a-Lot and the song Posse on Broadway.
My posse's on Broadway.
And to the point that you just made, you know, he goes out of his way in the beginning of that song to talk about Larry the white guy.
Larry is the white guy. People think he's funny. A real estate investor who makes a lot of money.
So he goes out of his way to talk about the multiracialness of his crew.
Sure.
Kind of very, very early on. And so you have that part of it there. But then also, you know, obviously, you know, this is 1987. The song is released.
Yeah.
Kind of right at the tip as gangster rap is beginning to really explode.
Yeah.
Kind of become what it eventually does is it kind of becomes the mainstream of rap in a lot of ways. But so that's there. But then in Posse on Broadway, the little sequence up at Dick's, you know what I mean? Not only is Mix-a-Lot preventing a woman from being assaulted by her boyfriend, but he's diffusing the situation with mace.
She picked it up and kissed it. Her boyfriend's illin, he went to slap her face. My homeboy PLB, cold sprayed the boy with mace.
You know what I mean? That's right. Not exactly what NWA was talking about at that time.
Nah, so, they're shooting everybody.
First of all, the song Six in the Morning, Ice-T is talking about beating a woman down in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I played that song on Street Sounds a couple of months ago when I was still doing it, and I had forgotten that verse. I was just like,
And every, you know what I'm saying, whatever conflict NWA was in were being solved by shotguns and Uzis.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm just saying that this area, that Mix-A-Lot example is just kind of speaks to the larger dynamic of this area of not feeling like, you know what I'm saying, we got to be like these people over here and these people over there. And I think that is related, at least in part, to the, like I said earlier, the diverse nature and so many different perspectives. I mean, I don't think that this place has ever lost the sense or the understanding that hip hop is and is from the African-American experience. But in practice, it has always been as diverse as the country itself. And so I think that those two kind of things kind of intertwine together to speak to these issues around race and the possibility of whether. And then, you know, there's always the issue around white MCs. The white MC has you know, occupied kind of a complex space in the culture for a long time.
You've exploited and stolen the music, the moment, the magic, the passion, the fashion you toyed with. The culture was never yours to make better.
In most cases, that white MC is a descendant of the power and privilege that, you know what I'm saying, spurred the rise of hip hop, kind of pushing back against that in the first place.
You bastard, all the money that you made off the water down. Pop bullshit version of the culture, pal. Go buy a big ass lawn, go with your big ass house. Get a big ass fence, keep people out. It's all stolen anyway. Can't you see that now?
There are those tensions there. I also think that, you know, like I said, everybody brings something different to the party. And the fact that this party here, you know, figuratively speaking, was attended by so many different people from so many different places with so many different backgrounds and points of view, I don't think that could have done anything but strengthen the scene. And I think it did.
I think about that, the geographical isolation you're talking about. You know, we're not a half an hour from San Francisco or LA or New York. So we didn't have to kind of glom to a given paradigm and sound. We kind of had to figure it out. And I think, were you the one, is it in the book where it's literally being broken down how far we are from these major cities?
Yep. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, even though, what is it? It's like 900 miles or so down to San Francisco and like 1500 or 1600 miles to Minneapolis.
Right. But, and that said everything, because that's stylistically in so many ways at different times we've existed at the nexus of the sounds that came from these places.
But it also means that, so there may not be huge cities in between. I mean, no disrespect to Portland, although anytime you say no disrespect, I guess there's about to be disrespect. But so aside from Portland, there aren't huge cities necessarily in between here and Minneapolis, right, or in between here and San Francisco. But there are towns, there are cities, there are places. And in each of those places, there are consumers of culture. And those people in those places look to Seattle as kind of the capital of this portion of the country, not only around sports teams and art and that kind of thing, but specific urban, you know what I'm saying, expressions and music and those kinds of things. So definitely Seattle being the capital of this area and people from all around kind of looking to us, you know, also puts us on a platform and gives us, gives Seattle anyway, kind of unique cachet just over a huge geographic portion of this country, which I think very few others, in terms of just square mileage, I don't think very few other urban places have, because so many other places are close to other large urban centers. New York City is not far from Philadelphia and places like that, you know what I'm saying? And so the uniqueness of where we are situated and kind of the the barren landscape, if you want to call it that, that kind of surrounds us, also puts us in a unique position of influence.
Interesting. And I feel like in ways that mirrors a lot of cultural developments in the Northwest in general.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, the story of hip hop is the story of society.
Hmm.
And so you are going to see, as you know, you listen, you know, if you're reading through the book and you're you know, kind of doing a track list and you're, you know, things or artists are to say, you're going to hear stories, you know what I'm saying, of in the 80s, of Ice Cold Mo, Union Street Hustle. It must be a drive by my homeboy, shot back the police, west of the street store, Union, the game's called Hustling. Union Street Hustling, here we go, here we go. What was going on with the crack epidemic there? You're going to hear, you know, later on, someone like Dre's, you know, talking about how the hood ain't the same. He's talking right. about gentrification, irony on 23rd.
They say that 23rd is booming. Man, 23rd is ruined. 23rd song in my palm and it's so confusing.
Most definitely, you're going to hear the story not only of hip hop, but you're going to hear the story of Seattle.
Right. I'm talking with Dr. Dowdy Abe about his new book, Emerald Street, A History of Hip Hop in Seattle. You are an academic, so you're pretty familiar with thesis statements.
Yes, sir.
Now that you've written a book on the history of Seattle hip hop, how would you summarize the scene and its history in a thesis statement?
Okay. Let me see here.
When the shoe is on the other foot.
That's good. That's very good. Let's see here. I would probably say that the legacy of hip-hop in Seattle and Seattle hip-hop is a legacy of the unexpected. And so by that, I'm meaning people like, you know, I explained the Mix-a-Lot, you know, kind of the difference in Mix-a-Lot and the fact that, you know, you have these, you know, example, like two crews coming together on Beacon Hill to form Massive Monkeys. And not only that, but the kind of the, what's the right word I'm looking for? Not the godfather necessarily, but the, well, maybe like a godfather, someone like Fever, you know what I mean? Who I went to middle school with, goes and joins the Rocksteady crew. You know what I'm saying? That is ill, man. I mean, if people are unaware of Rocksteady, it's like, you know, the hip hop equivalent of the Alvin Ailey Dance Company, or you know what I'm saying, whatever high profile or the highest level is. And him not being satisfied with that and coming back and leveraging that into mentoring young people that eventually led to Jefferson Community Center becoming the mecca of breaking in Seattle. And so, you know, and then someone like, you know, Diggable Planets, who, you know, during the time it wasn't necessarily completely advertised that Butterfly was from here, but he was clearly kind of the leader of that group, and the way that they, you know, talked about socialism and Marx and right. categorized themselves as insects. And, you know what I'm saying? Nobody was doing that in the 90s. That was not kind of a popular strain of rap that people were on at the time.
For sure.
And then, you know, just to the more recent Grammy winner, someone like Macklemore, who, you know, the two songs that made him most popular, you know, were Thrift Shop and Same Love. And those two things go directly against two of the most prominent features of mainstream hip hop in bling and homophobia. And so just the idea that you can come out of here doing something completely different and be recognized and be celebrated in ways that may not necessarily be possible in other parts of the country, I think is what I'm saying by us in this area, this region, supplying the unexpected.
Right on. I love that. Legacy of the unexpected.
For sure.
I've been speaking with Dr. Dowdy Abe about his new book, Emerald Street, A History of Hip Hop in Seattle. Dowdy, thank you for your time today. Always great to talk to you.
My pleasure, Larry.
We beat to rap, what key beat to lock, but I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool.
That was Sound and Vision. I'm Larry Mizell Jr. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And if you have the means, please consider giving a one-time $20 donation to support this podcast at kexp.org/sound. Thanks for listening.
We out. We out. We out.